What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
The all-new OTB Sports app. It's all videos, sports news, live scores, interviews, podcasts, all waiting for you. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Oh, the shape that will get. If you let all the fans down.
Can we not lock it?
It's a fact. I'm not playing mind games. I'm talking about facts.
I always said if I was Aladici, I would probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
The answer questions on anything, religious, politics, health, you know, sexual problems.
Look at his face! Just look at his face!
None of you, except for those two, have done anything to justify the money that you earn. None of you! Disgrace!
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
All right, welcome back. So we're turning to Ireland and their defeat to Serbia in the World Cup qualifiers. Now, I am taking a little bit of a different approach. Some of you who listen to my Huddle Breakdown podcast, the Celtic podcast that I host, will know the name Jucco James. But if you're not here, if you're not listening to that regularly, his name is Jucco James, and he is a stats guy. He is an XG guy, and he's a lot more intelligent when it comes to football data than I am. So he's going to take a little bit of a different approach to this Ireland game because he has no skin in the game. A lot of the coverage around Ireland has been dominated by two factions, the factions that want Martin O'Neill, the factions that want Mick McCarthy, the people who think that we should have went to Serbia and just parked the bus and got a draw and got out of there. And then there are the Stephen Kenny loyal people who think that this project is going to eventually lead to something successful, which I do think myself, I am in that boat. James, how are you getting on?
I'm okay. Good morning. And just for full transparency, it's a little after 7 a.m. my time. I've got my Green Hulk, green and white coffee mug so that I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed for our discussion here.
Yeah, we'll keep that in mind when, you know, you might be stumbling over a couple of words. You know, it's I'll give you time to wake up and, you know, smell the fresh air of lockdown.
Please, please. Thank you.
So Ireland 2, Serbia 3. Obviously, this is a game that you're approaching in a completely different manner. So maybe explain your point of view when you're coming into these games, because as someone who analyzes data and looks at a game completely objectively, you're watching a different game to us because emotion plays a huge part in what we're seeing.
Yeah, so I have an affinity for Ireland. I have an affinity for the Irish team. My mother was raised Irish Catholic in Clydebank, Scotland, so that's kind of my link to Celtic. So great grandparents from Ireland, family in Ireland. So I'm not completely disconnected, but I certainly do not live and breathe the national team as probably most of the viewers that would watch this do. You're right. I mean, I watched the games. This is the first one that I've, because we were doing this, I really attacked it, so to speak, from an analytical perspective. So I watched it kind of like everyone else yesterday. I'd done some prep going in, and then, early this morning, I got up even earlier than 7 a.m. and to take a look at the report, statistically and analytically. The whole idea of analytics is to recognize the fact that we are emotional beings, and that creates all kinds of cognitive traps for us. So we all have our own biases, we all have our own baggage, preferences, those type of things, and we see that and the world really through those lens. And what data and stats and analytics hopefully does is help us refocus and look at things objectively. So maybe that's what I can help do with the game yesterday.
And one caveat that I always point out to people who are listening to sort of data analytics for the first time when it comes to football and might not enjoy it or might not like it is take it with an open mind that the likes of XG, it's not telling you that Ireland should have won the game. It's just telling you that they had chances and measuring those chances and how good they actually were.
Yeah, exactly. So because football is such a low scoring sport, you know, things like XG in a single game are strictly contextual, meaning that it provides, think of XG literally as the quality of a chance, the quality of a shot. It doesn't mean, you know, when you're talking, just like when you gamble at a casino, use probabilities of a certain bet, you don't know what the outcome is going to be, whether it's a 5% bet or 50% bet. So, you know, having a sense of what the performance was is what is the analytics is all about, thinking that over the long term. And this is really what this is all about. So looking at a manager like Kenny, how do you assess managerial effectiveness relative to variance? And because of the low scoring nature of football, you can have significant periods of time longer than one game. I mean, we look at the Premier League this year. I mean, everyone's talked about Brighton for forever as far as there being significant variance in relative to their performance levels and results. So the idea here is making effective decisions based off of objective analytics so that you're not firing managers, for example, that are doing a good job because they've had bad luck or bad sequencing. They don't have any strikers, or they have, you know, unfortunately they're down to their third keeper that maybe doesn't have any experience, you know, so there's factors that aren't necessarily directly in line with managerial control. So it's really a thinking about how do we attribute performance, where was the performance coming from? Was it good or bad? Or, and so that you can have a more objective framework to try and make good decisions. So that's, and you're right. I mean, from a fan's perspective, some of the stuff, some people will find it interesting. Obviously, what we try to do from a content perspective is make it as relatable as possible. And you know, we're not expecting, and I don't expect people to be, I don't even do it, watching games with this, you know, spreadsheet mindset. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's not what we're doing this for. It's to have fun and enjoy and to have that emotional connection and involvement. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the aftermath to think about things more analytically and, what should happen as opposed to the kind of the heat of the moment.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Stephen Kenny, as an Ireland manager, I can't think of anyone who's had worse luck in terms of just things going against them that really are once in a lifetime things, like the Slovakia game, for example, and the first game that he properly took in charge off of competitively, and two players who were on a plane sat beside someone who tested positive. They were linked as close contacts and they were out of the game. It turned out that guy actually got a false positive. So the players were out for no reason. They were supposed to be starting that night. Injuries, COVID tests, false positives all over the place.
And you need to stop. You're triggering my Celtic PTSD here. This is not good.
And it's just what it has led to is 7 games without a goal. But then we get to this Serbia game, and this is, again, some issues with this squad because the Conor Hourihan, who should have been starting, pulled out injured. Kevin Kelleher, who's starting in goals, pulled out injured. An injury list of 6-7 players, and you're picking out key players that might be starting. But eventually we lead to a 5-3-2 starting formation with Mark Travers in goals, Doherty, Coleman, O'Shea, Clark, Stevens. In midfield, we had Josh Cullen with Brown and Jason Malumbi, and Connolly starting up front with Robinson. That was a fairly decent starting 11, considering the squad that we went there with. In terms of that formation, you did a bit of a deep dive on these players and sort of their strengths, their weaknesses. Did that make sense to you in terms of the formation and where each player was playing?
Yeah, so I think what I saw, and again, the systems are always fluid and dynamic. So typically attacking, teams will attack in a certain shape, and then you'll get oftentimes a different shape when defending. So I'd agree with you. It looked to me almost like a 5-2-3 in defense. So when Ireland were out of possession, it looked like it was the 5 at the back, 2 sitters, and then 3 at the front kind of pressing. And the pressing was actually relatively effective. We'll get into that, some statistical evidence of that. And then out of possession, it looked kind of like a hybrid of like a 3-4-3, or a 3-4-1-2. And I think that's probably the easiest way to think about it is 3-4-1-2. And that has become a more in vogue shape with analytically driven clubs. Like, let's say Atalanta plays that shape. They kind of flip between a 3-4-1-2 and a 3-4-2-1. So it's, you have two strikers and a 10 or two 10s and a striker. Scotland has gone that direction under Steve Clarke. They've gone 3-4-2-1 with two 10s and a striker. So so I think that's basically what the game unfolded from a shape perspective. From a selection perspective, yeah, I thought, and you and I exchanged tweets before the game when I saw the lineup, it was refreshing, again, as a Celtic supporter, to see a coherent selection going into the game relative to what I understood from what you had described to me is what you thought Kenny would do going into the game. So it seemed to be a coherent selection. And the people, you know, I like the idea of playing young midfielders. I mean, particularly in midfield. I mean, that's the engine of the team, obviously, and having legs. And being able to, you know, implement the kind of game plan and strategy it looks like Kenny is trying to achieve. So I actually joked with you. I mean, again, having not followed this closely enough to know number of caps that players have had in the past and that type of thing. I mean, just going through all the profiles and the players, I couldn't believe that this was Cullen's. I mean, he's barely played for Ireland. And I said to you, what the hell's going on? Why, you know, this guy's at Anderlecht, he looks really good. How is he not played more? And you said to me, well, he's young. I said, he's 25. I mean, he's almost 26, I think. I mean, this is crazy. This guy should have been playing the last 3 or 4 years, it looks like. So that's a culture thing. That's a national team thing where a lot of times seniority and, you know, ideas about experience dominate more so even than at the club level. But when you get into the midfield in particular, there really is no substitute for, you know, a 22-year-old that can run and has that athleticism. So that from a shape perspective, and again, I have to be organized and all of that, but and you saw that in the game. I mean, if you look at the recent games, a proxy for this is, you know, duels is a stat that I always look at, which is, you know, two players basically battling for a ball. You know, and it's a binary outcome. One team wins the duel, one team loses it. And, you know, despite a game where one going in would think, well, Serbia's got more talent, more players playing at higher levels, and Ireland having a bunch of young guys, some of which don't have a lot of experience at that level, Ireland actually won 52% of the duels. So they won more than they lost. And that's, you know, it's just one stat. Any stat by itself is almost worthless, but again, it's that's why analytics is its own thing, is how do you assess these things. So I found that as encouraging relative to prior games, and I think some of that is because of the youth and the athleticism that was in the side. Now the flip side of that is the control of the game at times, and the effectiveness in passing was a little bit you know, not great. So you look at and again, the enunciations on these names is going to be a problem, Enda, so you call me out. But Malumbi, for example, had a rough game from an accuracy perspective in passing and turning the ball over a little bit. So that's the flip side of youth.
Yeah,
is decision making. So that, you know, it's a dual edged sword at times, but and you definitely saw that in the game.
Yeah, and the tradition of experience over youth is an interesting one that you bring up, because obviously we're very accustomed to Shane Duffy, and we've spoken about him multiple times on the Huddle Breakdown podcast. And the pre-match discussion was around whether Daryl O'Shea should be starting or whether Shane Duffy should be starting. And I was pulling my hair out, because there's a whatever about experience or form. Like, for example, Shane Duffy has in the past performed massively for Ireland when he needed to, and maybe form does change a little bit depending on your situation, because manager, players, everything like that, it's a different scenario, it's a different place, it's a different team completely. So maybe he could transform his form for Ireland, but he hasn't even been playing for Celtic. So the argument to say that Shane Duffy should have been starting last night was completely nonsensical from a football perspective and from a data perspective.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've been close to tracking what's going on with him at Celtic this season, analytically. And if Kenny's goal is to go more progressive and playing out from the back and, you know, get away from hoofball, as they say, you know, I think that makes sense that, mm-hmm. that Duffy wouldn't be selected even beyond form and how much he's been playing lately. I think that's a fundamental error that Celtic made in bringing him in was a misalignment with style of play and just really a poor fit that people in the analytics community, most of them saw that when Celtic signed him and it didn't quite make sense. So yeah, Duffy is a really good player and has tremendous attributes. I mean, he is a dominant person in defending when he has kind of backs to the wall or he's protecting the box, you know, aerial duels and even ground duels. He's really good, but not in games where there's a lot of transition, not when you're playing a high defensive line and where he has to move a lot or mm-hmm. where he's being, you know, relied upon to play the ball out a lot from the back against the press. So yeah, I don't think that was a game for Duffy analytically, based off of the way that Kenny decided to play. And again, that's not for me to judge. I mean, I could see an argument for playing a more defensive strategy going into Serbia. I mean, I'm not saying right or wrong. This is more of a contextual thing that given, the game plan and the game plan, and we'll talk about this, the game plan seemed to have been relatively effective from an underlying performance perspective, given the context. I think the selection made sense given what the game plan was.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the game then, because it finished 3-2. Alan Brown got the opener for Ireland. Vlahovic scored the equalizer just before halftime. And then two brilliant goals from Mitrovic, who came off the bench. James Collins scored late to make it relatively, you know, you can take the 3-2 result more than a 3-1 result. I think it somehow makes it better for Kenny. Ireland probably could have had a penalty as well, but that doesn't really matter. They didn't get a penalty. In terms of the performance then, the first half, clearly Serbia had the large chunk of possession and probably the control of the game, but they didn't really have a clear-cut chance other than the goal.
Yeah, so possession worked out. I have it here. It was basically, let's call it 60-40, just to keep it as simple. It's a little off of that, but people will remember 60-40 easier. Given that level of possession, and if you look at number of passes, for example, Serbia had a lot more passes overall. Makes sense. That fits. Mm-hmm. But interesting, if you look at forward passes, meaning that, you know, just not passing it sideways or backwards and recycling possession at the back, that kind of thing, which, you know, those passes really don't do much other than control the ball, which again, that can have its merit. But another way of looking at it is forward passes. Ireland actually almost had exactly the same amount. It was only a few less. So I would argue Ireland did more relative to possession when they had it. If you look at other metrics like number of times at the ball, entered each other's box. So the other, you know, Ireland entered Serbia's box 22 times with the ball and Serbia entered Ireland's box 20. So, you know, that's a metric to think about, you know, how many times were they attacking the box? Now, 13 of them were crosses and crosses generally are a lower quality entry because they just don't have as high of a probability of creating a quality scoring chance versus 9 of the 20 for Serbia. But touches in the box were 17 to Ireland and 16 to Serbia. So again, if you think about just each team attacking each other's box, that creates a different narrative than 60-40 possession. So if you think about the 40, you know, Ireland attacked Serbia's box more with that 40% possession on a relative basis mm-hmm. than Serbia did with having 60% of the ball.
And in terms of, like, Serbia had a lot of corners as well. And I know that sort of worried you because you're looking at Ireland aerially, not all that great. But apart from that, what was the XG for this game? Because apart from, like, I'd imagine Mitrovic's goal, the first one at least, the chip, that would have been a low enough XG because it's far out and at an angle. The cross itself, the header that he got a head on, it wasn't the best cross. It was actually behind him and he managed to get it on that. So you're talking about quality in the box, because I mean, if you look at Mitrovic, I know he's, you know, people know him from Fulham, but he has 62 caps for his country. He's 26 years old. And I just looked through the Ireland squad and Mitrovic, who's 26, has more caps combined than Doherty, O'Shea, Cullen, Brown, Malumbi, Connolly, and Robinson combined.
That's right.
So it's it does come down to quality and it does come down to experience as well.
To a degree, yeah. And experience at level, meaning that you know, we talked about Colin. I mean, Colin's playing at a level now. He's got enough experience at a level. It's not like he's playing in League One in England. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm not making the argument that you play every 22-year-old or 23-year-old just because they're that age. I mean, that would be silly. Yeah, I agreed. I mean, if you look at the players at Serbia, I mean, when we talked before we went live here about Tadic and his impact on the game, I mean, that's probably even more so than at the club level in the international game. You get just individual brilliance can have such a huge impact on these games. And we certainly saw that yesterday with Tadic basically creating all three goals. But from an XG perspective, I want to create one caveat for anyone that's new watching, you know, again, to create context for what this means. So XG is a model. There's not one universal XG model, right? So it all depends on what the assumptions of the model are. So I get different data vendors that have different models. And so that's important to know. Every model is about an assumption. So the pre-shot XG, and basically what that means is the quality of the chance not taking into account the actual shot itself. So to your point, that header that they scored the goal on, that's going to be a low XG shot because, you know, most of those kind of shots don't go in. Some of that had to do with keeper play, which I'll get to in a second. So the pre-shot XG was 1. And this is according to Y Scout, was 1.42 for Serbia to 1.02 for Ireland. So that's a close game. I mean, when you get into pre-shot probability, and again, for the stat geeks out there, if you run a Monte Carlo simulation of outcomes, you know, if you run this game 10,000 times, sure, Serbia was more likely to win based off of this stat, but it's not that, you know, it's kind of a, you know, probably about a 40-20-40, you know, that kind of game where, about a 50-20-30, where 50% of the time Serbia is going to win, 20% it would be a draw maybe, and 30% of the time kind of thing that Ireland would win this kind of game. Mm-hmm. So relatively close on that metric. Another way to measure it is post-shot XG, which is to take into account the actual shot itself. And that was actually 1.56 for Serbia. So pretty close to their pre-shot, whereas Ireland's was 1.5.
Okay.
So really close. What that also highlights is that Ireland gave up 3 goals on post-shot XG of 1.56. And that speaks to, again, Travers and goal, probably not doing real great on the one goal that I think has been widely discussed already in the commentariat. So I'm not gonna beat a dead horse. I mean, I always feel for young guys that are getting probably played when they may not be ready. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not a fan of beating those type of people up. So everyone's out there trying their hardest, and you know, he may have had a bit of a rough game, but so that was important. And then Tadic, I mean, Tadic just, another metric that I track is something called deep completions, which is basically a threatening pass within 20 meters of the opposition goal. Serbia had 13 of those. Ireland had 6. Tadic had 7 of those 13.
Right.
So Tadic by himself had more of those threatening passes around Ireland's box than the entire Irish team had around Serbia's box. So Tadic was the difference maker in this game, obviously with the three assists and basically dictating play almost as a number 10. I mean, regardless of what he supposedly was lined up as, he just kind of floating around the box and wreaking havoc. So I'd say, you know, kind of distilling this game down to two people, you know, it was the keeper play of Ireland on a relative basis and then Tadic's individual brilliance.
I do want to come back to that post shot XG and how close that actually is and comparable with the squads and the quality that's in it and discuss maybe why that's really promising in terms of the quality of the squad that we're working with at the minute. But defensively for Ireland, this was a brand new defense. It's the first time they've played five at the back, really, with this combination of defenders. And if I were to objectively choose Ireland's defense, that probably would have been the selection I would have gone for, because Doherty naturally is a wing back. And I think the issues that we're seeing with him at Tottenham this year is the fact that he's playing in a traditional back four, and that's not the same position. Coleman defensively has the attributes to play that right center back position, and Stevens naturally is a left wing back as well. The likes of Kieran Clark left off the center back makes sense because he's left footed and he's strong defensively. And then Daryl O'Shea, I think for his age, has brilliant defensive positioning, because I think he's 22 now, for his age to marshal that defense in the manner that he did last night, I thought it was really impressive. The goal itself for Vlahovic, the equalizer, Kieran Clark goes for the ball when he probably should have held his position. You did a little bit of a dive on Kieran Clark, and airily, that's his weakness, really, is it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say a weakness, more so. So, you know, when you asked me to do this, I did basically a statistical profile on each player. So basically it's looking at each player strictly from their statistical data and trying to, you know, almost like Nash in The Beautiful Mind. If anyone's seen that movie, right? So you're just looking at things and looking for patterns, not watching any footage of the player, trying to look at it purely as a spreadsheet geek, as they say. And what was fairly evident from Clark's profile to me was that, you know, he looks like a good box defender, kind of a mediocre passer of the ball. And I would characterize it as a mediocre aerial defender. So that's not inherently bad. Mm-hmm. So this comes down to the mix of your defense. So O'Shea, his profile is probably similar as far as passing goes. Also a good box defender, but probably a little better in the air, but not dominant. Mm-hmm. So that's your mix, right? So if you've got a mediocre center, and Coleman obviously is not going to be dominant in the air, playing as a, you know, basically a right back or a right wing back as a right center back. So that mix of three, and I said this to you going into the game, it was like, you know, there could be some issues in the air here, defending, because you don't really have, and this goes back to, you know, what would Duffy bring? That's why these are, you know, these are difficult questions to answer. So Duffy's going to bring that aerial dominance, but that comes with other issues. So it's a choose your battle. You know, not everyone can be Virgil van Dijk and be good at all of the above. So, you know, I think it wasn't shocking that there was a little bit of vulnerability there. And some of that's just the breaks. You know, is it a good cross? Is it a good delivery? Is there, you know, is there a mental mistake that's made? You know, is there a positional mistake, that kind of thing? So, you know, I wasn't shocked that there was some vulnerability there going into the game. And I wasn't surprised that it came from Clark. And again, that was purely just from a, you know, kind of having a statistical profile.
Yeah. And I think if you look at all three of the goals from Serbia, they're pretty much just mistakes as opposed to a, you know, a deep systematic issue with the team and with the squad and the way that they're playing, because the Clark one, as I said, if he just holds his position instead of coming out for that, Ireland probably don't concede that goal. Mark Travers obviously came off his line, and then, you know, defensively there was a few mistakes in the box for the Serbia goal, but they're not mistakes that you're going to repeat every single game, so it's not a massive worrying point for that to happen. In terms of the post-shot XG, because I do want to come back to that, so it was relatively level between the two sides. If you compare the squads, because that is key context for this, Milivojević-Savic, who plays for Lazio, was on the bench for these guys. You know, Tadic has 13 goals, 12 assists in Eredivisie this year for Ajax. Luka Jovic, who came off the bench, was signed for Real Madrid for 62 million last year. I know he's gone back down to Frankfurt on loan. And then the likes of, you know, Mitrovic has been playing first team football in the Premier League for years now. He's only 26. Vlahovic has 13 goals for Fiorentina in Serie A this year. And in Ireland squad, we had a combined total of 6 goals, I think, within the whole squad. We've got players who are playing, who aren't playing for their first team. The likes of Malumbi, who's starting, hasn't played for Brighton much this year. Connolly has been starting for Brighton, but he's been in and out of the team. Robinson not playing for West Brom, who are relegation candidates, you know. So the fact that this game was so close and we were able to play a style of football that wasn't hoofball, that we weren't parking the bus, that shows you that the process that Stephen Kenny is going about here does make sense and is working.
Yeah, I right after the game, I expressed to you who I thought there was a lot to be encouraged. And that was just from my eyes, you know, kind of the sense coming out of the game. And then, you know, this morning going over the game statistically, that confirmed it. I mean, it was, I think if you look at the relative quality of players, you know, and I talk about this within the context of club football too. If you know, managers get way too much credit and way too much criticism relative to the success of teams. You know, in club football, the primary driver is wage budget, and that comes back to financial resources, right? So that it's the aberrations when you get small clubs that come up and win leagues on, you know, 20% of the budget. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason why a handful of clubs in each league win the vast majority of the leagues. It's because they have the most money. That's common sense. That makes the most sense. The next step is, well, how much, what do you do with that money in the club football? Well, in international football, it's basically where are people born? You know, how's a manager going to control that, right? You get golden eras like France is having now or Belgium's having now. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a relative population and probabilities of number of footballers in a country that play into it. It's why countries like Uruguay are so amazing, that they consistently are, you know, pretty good with relatively small populations. So, you know, managers can only do so much with what they have. And I thought relative to player quality and the disparity there, and I think people have talked about Serbia in this context for a while, that they've underperformed relative to how good their players are.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the Ireland's performance yesterday was actually really good, and particularly given that this was, and you tell me, it's based off of what I've looked at, looks like a new system. Mm-hmm. I mean, to play that back three the way they did with the people where they were, young midfielders that weren't in there. I mean, that could have, going into Serbia against players of that quality, and do, you know, when you think about it within that context, that it wasn't a mess is a first hurdle to come over. That they weren't, as you pointed out, I mean, it's not like they were caught out in transition and there were terrible mistakes in a sense that, you know, people weren't in the right positions or gaping holes in the midfield. You know, generally speaking, it looked like a well-organized team that were playing in a system that made sense with the selection that made sense. So if I had to grade Kenny coming out of this game with all of this context, I would say, you know, kind of a B plus or an A minus. I mean, it really was a good setup and a good performance from, you know, relatively limited players compared to who Serbia had playing.
Yeah.
So the flip side of that is you could say, well, Serbia, you know, probably underperformed. Now, how much of that, you know, this is that duality, how much of that was due to Ireland's effectiveness? How much of it was due to, you know, Serbia's manager not doing a good job? That's where you get it. That's tougher. I mean, I haven't analyzed Serbia. He's a new manager.
That was his first game in charge, and they had loads of issues as well when it came to their squad, because a couple of them play in France, and obviously France has their own strict rules when it comes to COVID. So, right. I mean, there's context for their squad as well when it comes to it. But it's almost like, so say, for example, the best way I can describe this to you is the horror show that Neil Lennon produced for Celtic this year. So Ireland have basically been producing that for the last 15 years, maybe more. Like the traditional, even the Serbia manager, who may not really know Stephen Kenny and his style of football and what he's trying to do, said that Ireland play a British style of football. And
right. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
that's what's associated with Ireland. The park the bus, get the ball up to the big guy up front, hold it up, and maybe scrape a result. And it has worked at some stages. I mean, pulled off some big results under Martin O'Neill. Beat Germany to qualify for the Euros, beat a couple of big teams at the Euros, got to the last 16, and it was a great time, and you get these great results. And I think that's why it's so difficult for people to park that, because that football is effective when it comes to getting results over big teams. But eventually your luck runs out and you don't get results. And the style of football matters. So I think I would rather watch Ireland do what they did last night, where something makes sense, where the system makes sense, the team is clearly coached, and they're progressive, and they're trying to win the game, and they may not get the result, then watch Ireland park the bus, hoof the ball up long, let the team attack them the whole game, and then they might not get a result.
Yeah, so there's a lot there. I think... So this is going to be influenced by my being American and following the U.S. team, who's the primary national team that I follow, and the experience with Klinsmann. And he basically tried to do what it sounds like to me that Kenny's trying to do. He came in and tried to change the American style of play from what had been a defensive counterattack culture to more of a possession-based progressive. And the challenge there, I always find, and there was criticisms, for example, again, through the lens of being a Celtic supporter, Brendan Rodgers, at his time at Celtic, you know, people would call him naive trying to play that against Barcelona and PSG and Celtic got absolutely hammered in a couple of those games, mm-hmm. you know, 7-0, 7-1 type of games. So there's a balance between, and this is what, if you listen to some of these great tactical managers, they talk about it's really style of play and principles of play more so than system is what's important. And so I think rigidity is the enemy here. So I think part of the problem that the U.S. national team had under Klinsmann is he was rigid in that. So, you know, when you're playing Jamaica in CONCACAF, that's one thing. And then when you go up against Portugal or another team as the American team, it's not the same thing. So mm-hmm. to play the exact same way or try to play the exact same way may not be the best idea. So what I will be interested to see from Kenny is he a little bit more flexible? Meaning that yesterday, you know, with all of the issues with Serbia that you pointed out and the fact that they have been serial underperformers, I'll be curious to see what Kenny does when he goes up against kind of a higher level team. Because there might be a time when you do want to play more defensive and more counter. Still play, you know, with it's contextual. It's not a binary thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you still maybe want to selectively play out from the back. But there are certain points where if you're just, you know, if you're turning the ball over as much as they did yesterday against a team that's more athletic and dynamic than a Serbia is, and in transition in particular, then they're going to cut you open. So that's where the limitations of the team are going to come in, and how do you, you know, it's a spectrum, mm-hmm. right? So I'll be curious to see how that looks, and not so much from a shape perspective, but you know, there might be a time when a Duffy should come back in selectively, and that's, you know, that'll be interesting for me to see now that I'll be tracking the team a little bit more as we go forward.
Yeah. Stephen Kenny does have somewhat experience playing in different like styles and different dynamics of games, because the Dundalk team that he managed were dominant in the league, but then when they got into Europe, they had to produce a different performance against Zenit, against AZ, and they did. They were a lot more defensively rigid, but again, they didn't sacrifice. And I think that was actually a great point that you made. The system can change, but the general ideals of not turning to hoofball as a result of pressure, I think he's more of that manager. He will change the system and he will adjust it to suit the team that he's playing against if they're better. And we're going to have to do that against Portugal anyway. And he managed to pull off good results against a lot bigger sides like AZ, and against almost, they even took the lead against Zenit at one point. And but they didn't sacrifice their style of play to do that. They still played with the basic principles of keeping the ball and controlling the game that way and soaking up pressure that way by being solid in shape than kicking the ball long and just hoping for the best.
Yeah, and I think to me a major structural thing, strategy that a team of Ireland's profile is going to have to focus on, and to me it looks like he is going in this direction, is having the athleticism in midfield and in the forward position to press and counter press. That is going to be of utmost importance. So that's where you get in. When you set up for hoofball, if that target man is not athletically dynamic enough to enable a good press and a good counter press, that gets to be a challenge. I mean, that then all of a sudden, that's when you know if you have a bad day at the office, so to speak, in that place, a person having hold up play and relieving the pressure, or if they're up against good center backs that dominate aerially, you know, how do you control the game? And that's where you saw yesterday, despite that, you know, again, from an analytics perspective, from a performance analysis perspective, yesterday's game made sense to me if you look at the statistics and how it kind of flowed through the game. Mm. So one metric's called passes per defensive action, right? So that's a proxy for pressing intensity. So the lower the number, you know, it's like golf score. The lower the number, the higher the intensity of pressing. So they were basically at parity yesterday, at around eight, just over eight between Serbia and Ireland. And that's a low number, man. In international football, you know, it tends to be, I think over the last year in international football, it's been around 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. So that's a good level of intensity of pressing. And if you look at the fact that, you know, all these other metrics that we talked about, that Ireland was with, you know, 40% of the possession, was able to generate a lot of the similar type of threatening of Serbia's box, to me is a reflection of that they had good athleticism, able to win duels and able to counter press and press and kind of balance out this issue of talent disparity with structure, with a game plan and kind of a coordinated press that seemed to be, you know, kind of a well-coached side. And that's what we see over and over now, is that teams that have a talent disparity or a wage budget disparity in the context of club football, they can really flatten that curve, so to speak, in competitive balance by being well-coached, having a hard to break down side defensively, and being really well coordinated in how they're pressing and the rotations and their movements. So that's again where I see the encouragement coming out of Ireland. And it'll be interesting when they get some health back, maybe swap out, you know, a balance of youth with some more, a little bit more experience in midfield, maybe. And you know, I thought the strike partnership was interesting. I thought Robinson had a really good game, relative to Connolly. Connolly was pretty isolated. Connolly only had three passes that he received, only made five passes. So that's the kind of impact on the game that a striker that's isolated has. Whereas Robinson had 14 touches of received passes and made 28 passes. So he was much more, he was the striker dropping kind of link up play with Brown and that type of thing. So, you know, that, again, that makes sense. So again, when I look at all things here, it looks to me like there was a game plan. It was well executed. The players seemed to know what their roles were. And overall everyone did a pretty good job with some errors. I mean, the mistakes, you know, again, Serbia made a horrible mistake that led to Ireland's second goal. Oftentimes what happens. So mistakes are going to happen. It's a question of whether or not the system's resilient enough to minimize mistakes and keep things okay when there are mistakes.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can turn those mistakes into something good. And over the next couple of weeks, we'll see some Ireland wins. And I just pray to God that Ireland don't turn into the Brighton of international football, where everyone comes away thinking they played really well there, but they got beaten 3-2 again. So Luxembourg this Saturday, hopefully, I mean, that's a more even game. So hopefully Ireland will come away with a win there. Jico James, thanks very much for joining me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me.